Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, there was a time where it really looked like tonight's podcast might take
a turn. Man, I was gonna be so mad at you tonight. I was like, you Lakers better not play like that the whole game because you'd be fucking miserable. Yeah.
Fortunately, they picked things up in the second half, and like I'd be an asshole if I didn't give credit to where it's due with that lineup and with Rondo specifically. I thought that lineup really noticed that they needed to pick up the pace, and I do kind of wonder if this is a way that the Lakers can make Rondo successful. Is if they just say, look, you're going to get low minutes. And in those minutes, we need you to come in and just change the pace and push it at every single turn, make or miss.
He's so much better when he's aggressive, yeah. Man. Like, this is obviously a game against the Warriors, but yep. It was stylistically similar to the Boston game, mm-hmm. where that's obviously a very good team, and he changed the game in that respect. And to me, that's ideally Rondo's role on this team. I like, all the playoff Rondo stuff and all that, like, I don't think you should be able to depend on Rondo, right?
Yeah.
The guys you depend on need to be able to be the dude that they are, like, 3 out of 4 games. Mm-hmm. And Rondo's a, like, 1 out of 5 type of games, and that's being generous. Mm-hmm. But when he has it, he can do something that nobody else on this team can do. And that's 2 out of the last 3 games or 2 out of the last 4 where – he's brought that to the table. So he's more like he's the frosting on the cake, the gravy, the if he's got it going, great, but I don't want to have to depend on him. But in terms of stylistically, you're right on point with push and pace because that's when he's at his best. He's not over dribbling the ball. It's not stagnant. Everything's just go, go, go.
Yeah, I would like to see how the Lakers fare while Rondo's on the court when they shoot the ball before the 10-second mark of the shot clock compared to, mm-hmm. you know, when it gets below that. Because usually if it's below that, the possession doesn't look good. It's not like, you know, those classic Spurs possessions where the ball is zipping around and then, you know, the ball gets under 10 seconds and it's for a wide-open corner three-pointer. That's not how it goes. Like, it's usually Rondo's dribbling, and then he's dribbling. He dribbles some more. Passes to AD or Kuzma, and they have to get a shot off with 5 seconds or less on the shot clock. And mm-hmm. I think when the Lakers are, and we saw that, and like you said, it's the Warriors, they're terrible. The Lakers won by 30. The Warriors are going to wind up winning like 15 games this year. So mm-hmm. that needs to be pointed out. But I do kind of think, like we've said all season, we know that Vogel isn't going to eliminate Rondo from the rotation. We know that's going to happen. So how can mm-hmm. you optimize those Rondo minutes? And I think the way you do it is to just tell him, push it on makes, on misses, whatever. Just go in there, change the pace of the game for 5 minutes or so per half, and get out of there.
And all I want out of that is a quick hook, right? Like he did in that third quarter of the last game against the Pelicans, right? He was freaking terrible in that game. Mm-hmm. And he was out of that game by like 2-3 minutes left in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And I would like that pretty much on each shift of his. Like he's got to show in the first couple of minutes that he's in it and that he's making a positive impact. If not, those need to be 4-minute shifts, right? And mm-hmm. he plays 8 minutes that night. It also, like, they need to, if they're going to play him, they need to give him some incentive to ball out, right? To yeah. be the guy he can be. And that's, in terms of having a quick hook for him, I think that's the route to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about human nature here, and if he just knows that he's going to get his minutes regardless, then why pay attention to the details? Why make a positive impact out there if you're just going to get your minutes regardless? And that's how it's been frustrating to watch because that's how he's approached a lot of this year. But at least last night, you saw a noticeable difference from first half Rondo to second half Rondo. And that second half Rondo, again, the giant flashing lights disclaimer here. Do not miss this giant sign that yes, it was the Warriors, but I think that approach to Rondo minutes is how he's going is the really honestly the only way he's going to be successful. I don't think he can be successful if he's trying to play quarterback out there.
And bro, we're so much better when he's playing well.
Yeah.
Like it that particular attribute, that shot creation, that's what I've been babbling about all year, right? Like, when Rondo is on, the team just hums, man. And it's a, yeah, it's nice to see. But yeah, I think that's the approach that needs to be taken.
The other player that, you know, kind of turned, again, Warriors or whatever, but Kuzma looked better out there. And we're kind of seeing a trend that if one of LeBron or AD is out, he tends to step up a little bit. He finishes the game 29 minutes, scores 18 points, 8 of 17 from the floor, only 1 of 2 from the free throw line, which seems low because he was being aggressive driving into the paint. But he finishes the game, in my opinion, most notably a plus 23 on the night. That's, you know, that to me, and it felt like it too. That's one of those situations where he's a game high, well, 1 point off. Caldwell Pope was a plus 24, but he was essentially a game high plus minus, and the stats backed up the eye test.
He needs to start being more aggressive when both LeBron and AD are playing. The approach that he had here, where he's just looking to attack and looking to score, that is who he is. That is just naturally like what he does. And he has too many like 3-for-9 type nights, right? Or these games where he's just not putting up enough shots. Right, 2-for-7, stuff like that, where it's just not enough shots. I don't know if he doesn't feel like he's got permission to attack when both guys are playing, but this is the dude. Like, and we've seen this a few times throughout the year. He's getting more perimeter ball handling opportunities, and he's been better with that. He was really, really bad in the Pelicans game alongside Rondo. But again, part of that is like his best stretch was in that second quarter when he wasn't alongside Rondo at all. Yeah. And so I'd like to see those minutes get separated a little more, but seeing his ball handling, his pick and roll, his ability to score off of floaters. He had a beautiful spin move in this game.
Yeah.
Just get downhill, attack the basket. Yeah, that's when he's at his best. His three-point shooting is, I think, down to like 31% or something like that, which is something that like he can never be that great of a compliment to our main guys if he's shooting that poorly. But him getting downhill at least provides some of that value.
Yeah, I also thought the biggest play of the game for him, and this is a game where he had, like you said, the spin moves, he had the dunk that followed Anthony Davis's crazy save, you know, all that stuff. But to me, my favorite play of the game from Kyle Kuzma was, I think it was Eric Pascal was driving to the basket, and I think it might have been in transition or semi-transition, and Kuzma tried to meet him at the rim, and now very easily could have been murdered by Pascal, because Pascal's got that kind of athleticism. But he fouled him, forced him to the free throw line. Like, that's the when that happened, I said, okay, it's going to be a good Kuzma game. That's what
that's winning basketball right there.
And like, you know, remember last year or in years past when Julius Randle would like pick up a ticky tack, like reaching foul, and you're like, all right, it's going to be a bad Randle game. We're going to get one of those.
Right.
It was the opposite of that game with Kuzma.
Yeah, and again, you know, Warriors, but these are the types of games that this is what they're valuable for. And this is the stretch, man. Like, the next 2 weeks, we've got a three-game stretch of, like, Philly, Milwaukee, and Clippers or something like that, like three games in a row. This is the dress rehearsal. We're entering, like, dress rehearsal territory for what the playoffs are going to be. Lakers have won, what, 7 in a row now? And they're starting to hum real good. LeBron as a scorer, I think, is kind of the linchpin for a lot of that. But a guy like Kuz being able to provide that off the bench. Markieff Morris gave some nice minutes, too. You can see kind of the pop that he's got as a scorer. Right. We're close, man. We're not that far away from where we need to be. Like, they didn't make all the moves that I wanted them to make, and they never do, like, nor should they, right? But they're close enough to, like, if things break the right way, if, you know, just certain things happen, man, we can do this. I really believe it.
I'm glad that you talked about the moves that they didn't make, because I want to take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk about a move I don't want them to make in Dion Waiters. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Arizona Board of Tourism. The spring training games are already underway. The Dodgers are already looking pretty good. They're going to be really good this year. You're going to want to get in on this Dodgers team early, I think. It might be one of those special seasons. And the best way to do that is to head on out there to Arizona, check out a few of these games, check out the competition. You can do that while you're out there as well. And even though the games are already underway, there's plenty of time to still plan one hell of a trip out there. Even if it isn't baseball, you got golf, you've got hiking, you've got biking, they got hot air balloon trips, great food, great restaurants, music. They got it, whatever you might be looking for. So head on over to visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining. Start planning your trip today. And again, as we're seeing here with the Lakers, you only get these kinds of seasons every so often. It might be one of those special ones here with the Dodgers. Get in on that early. visitarizona.com/springtraining. visitarizona.com/springtraining. All right, so we spent yesterday's show talking about whether or not Dion Waiters is something that a direction that the Lakers should go in. And the conclusion I came to after going, you know, benefits and risks, the decision I came to at the end of it was I don't think the risks are worth it. I don't think it's worth it for the Lakers to go in that direction. With that, just as a general foundation here, you just talked about how the Lakers are close. Are they close enough to where you consider Waiters the piece that gets him over the top? Or are they close enough to where you don't think it's worth messing with this by bringing in somebody like Dion Waiters?
So I think Waiters could be a luxury. I don't think that he's essential, but I do think that he could be helpful. All of this boils down to so much off the court stuff.
Yeah,
like I could talk about his pick and roll game, his shot creation. He's got some things that like he can defend. He's got some on court ability that you get a guy like that for free. Of course, you're gonna, and he's a guy that can play in a playoff game when maybe Troy Daniels cannot. Mm-hmm. So there's value in that, but so much of whether or not this is a good idea or a bad idea, it's like Dwight, it's the off the court stuff. And the, like, is he going to be able to fit in? According to reports, his time with LeBron wasn't the best, and he'd probably have to convince LeBron, right, that this time
it took
would be
three games
different.
I have a few, you know them, you know Justin, you know Carter, you know Chris
Carter,
Mort's my favorite one of those guys, just because I find him hilarious. But he said, like, you know, because I released the podcast today, he DM'd me and he goes, hey man, it took three games for LeBron to be sick of Dion Waiters. Like three whole games. You said, there's probably going to have some rebuilding of bridges to make that work.
If LeBron was cool with it, would you be cool with it?
Problem is, like, LeBron's cool with Rondo. So, like, are we just buying? Here's the person I think I trust more than LeBron in this case. We have to trust Pelinka. He sat down and he spoke to Dwight Howard, and based on that conversation, recognized that Howard wasn't a place to exhibit the maturity and the maturation process that we've seen over the course of this year, right? If he sits down with Waiters and he sees that same thing, and he sees a role and Waiters is understanding that he is going to be considered a luxury, he might not play all the time, and he's okay with that, then, you know, then I'm okay-ish with it. I still think it's a risk, but I'm okay-ish with it. How about you? Do you think whose input do you outweighs the other there?
It's kind of like a collective thing between Pelinka, Rich Paul, and LeBron. Mm-hmm. Rob Pelinka was Dion Waiters' former agent. Mm-hmm. Rich Paul is Dion Waiters' current agent, and LeBron is LeBron. They played together. Those dudes know him way better. Like if those three come to an agreement, like, yeah, this is good for the team. That's enough for me. Mm-hmm. Right. Where these guys who know him particularly well, they are all motivated to win a title this year with this year. Like all three of them look good if this goes the right way.
Yeah.
So, that it's something like, I don't have an on-court argument against waiters. I mean, you know, shot selection could be bad. There's obviously he wouldn't be available if he was some perfect option on the market right now. But Duke could play. Duke could play a bit. And he's a better player than the guy he'd probably be replacing in Troy Daniels. So if there are people, I guess my point with all that is that, like, there's no guesswork in this, or very little guesswork in this. The people involved know exactly, like, what went down in Miami, where Waiter's head is at, what kind of shape he's in. It's his agent, and then it's his former agent. And so if they come together and say, like, no, this could help, I can get behind it.
Couldn't that closeness blind some stuff there, though?
Of course. Of course.
Like, that'd be what I'd be worried about.
But here's the thing. Like, how can Dion Waiters go poorly? How does that go wrong? If he doesn't go well, like, I don't even think if he came, I don't even think he'd be in the rotation in the first place. I think he'd be one of those in case of emergency break glass type of guys, right?
Would he be okay with that? Or if
Rondo sucks, that's a guy that can go. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. He ain't in the position to determine that, man. You got to bring him in and say, yo, you're the 11th man on this team. Maybe the 12th man on this team. And if you're not okay with that, don't come here.
Yeah.
But you got to be up front with that. And if you are, and he signs on to that, I think you're good to go.
He also wouldn't be the first, though, to be okay with that and then not okay with that. Right?
Like, then cut his ass. Well, then cut him.
Sure, but like we've seen how reluctant they've been to do that. Right? Like it took Markieff Morris becoming available for them to cut Boogie, and he didn't play for them this year.
Well, sure, but why cut a guy? Like, what would the point have been of cutting Boogie before then? What do we get out of it?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
They might have had other options earlier, maybe.
Maybe. I think if they had other options earlier, Boogie would have been cut earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe. Right? Like, if Collison comes on board, we probably cut Boogie. I don't know. I guess I don't see the big risk in doing this. He'd be joining a culture that's already established, that plays with great chemistry, with leaders who know who he is. That's going to be the challenge, is convincing them, right? Because even if Rich Paul and Rob Pelinka are blinded a little bit, you got this other factor in LeBron who did not like the guy, right? So if LeBron can be convinced, along with these two guys that know him real well, I will defer to them on this, on whether or not it's a good idea.
Yeah, and that's fair. You know, I'm not going to claim to know more about this than they do. I just think that chemistry has been such a big factor with this team. And maybe it's such a big factor and it is so strong that Dion Waiters can't throw it off, right? But if you get another clutch guy there and it's somebody who does have some people blinded by it, his track record here is pretty ugly. Like, it's not great. And the edible thing, I'm not even talking about the edible thing, because I'd be a complete hypocrite if I judged anybody for popping an edible here and there, right? But like the coming into training camp fat after he signed that big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And then the conduct detrimental to the team, like, we know how important the Miami Heat consider their culture, and they got rid of him. They said he's not worth it. He's not worth it to our culture. And so, like, if for a team here that's spent so much time and so much energy, so much focus on cultivating this culture, you know, I'd rather just say, you know what, I don't think there's a big enough upgrade from Troy Daniels to Dion Waiters to even mess with it.
And that's fair, but nobody knows this culture better than the people who'd be making the decisions on this in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I think that we saw at the trade deadline how much they valued that culture. Mm-hmm. So if he's able to, and that's a big if, man, I'm not acting like this is not something that they would say yes to, but if he can convince them, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. We'll see. They're going to meet with him. And I think the timing of the meeting is important here. They're meeting with him on March 2nd because they're going to wait to see everything that that the buyout market might bring to fruit, right? They, as has been reported, they have an eye on Mo Harkless. Did you see his interview after the game?
He's like, yes, it does suck going from a good team to the Knicks. Great question.
You know how he can fix that, though, right?
How's that? Oh, you demand a buyout? Yeah.
It's been reported that if he asked for one, he would be granted one. So, like, he's perfectly okay to ask for that buyout. He'd be all right.
I thought he said already that he's planning on finishing the season with the Knicks.
Yeah.
So I ain't holding my breath on that one.
But the reason I bring him up is because that's the kind of player that they would be waiting. Like, that's why they are waiting for to meet with waiters, right? Till after the March 1st deadline to buy out all these guys. So I think that in and of itself is telling, right? This like we're talking about how he would be a break glass in case of emergency type option. He's already that in just being a buyout candidate. So like that's you know, for those, myself included, who are skeptical about this as an option, this is an example of them approaching it that way anyway. So
very much so.
We got to trust this process, I think, here a little bit. Let's take another quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to open up the mailbag. It's been a while since Pete answered a few questions. We have one really fun one, and we have obviously a bunch of really good ones. We might do some rehashing just because I want to keep the weekend's questions open and because there's some good ones here for Pete to answer. So hang tight. We'll come back to that here in a bit. All right, so the first question here comes from Lakers Run LA, and it's a topic that we've kind of talked about but never really hammered home specifically or definitively. This is, again, Laker Run LA. Do you guys think moving Kuzma to small forward would help him be more effective? I think his size would be more useful there, especially if he did more off-ball cuts to the basket. Also, you guys need to start calling the Clippers by their actual name, the LA B Team, or the San Diego Clippers Lakers for life. We've talked about this, but what is it specifically that would make Kuzma more effective at small forward?
I think it's more on the defensive end. He's a really good lock and trail guy. A lock and trail is when a shooter is looking to come off of a screen. And what you do is you line up your waist with his hip. And so you lock onto him, try and stay attached. And that's a way to avoid the screens that are coming. You got to duck your front shoulder, all that good stuff. Kuz is really good at this. And think about Kuz. What are the attributes that are best about Kuz, right? For his size, he's quick and he's agile, light on his feet. He can be very active as a cutter. The same things are true on the defensive end, right? The same attributes that make him a decent scorer on offense can translate. Those are much easier applied from the three spot than they are from the four. At the four spot, you've got a lot of rim protection responsibilities and rotations.
Boxing
guys
out.
Boxing out and guys putting their shoulder into you or putting their forearm in the middle of your back and just walking you under. All that like physical stuff. Do you really like how many physical battles is Kyle Kuzma going to win within 5 feet of the basket? Not very many, because it's not like he's a great leaper either.
Yeah.
So he's just not like you're putting him in a position where his weaknesses will be less exposed offensively. Like there's an argument for it either way. It depends on who's at the four and the five. If Kuz is at the three, if your five is JaVale or Dwight, although there are the ball screens there, I would prefer Kuz at the three with like on the AD at the five type lineups, but there has been some pick and roll value. But beyond that, I think that spacing can be difficult, especially if he's not hitting his threes. It really comes down to that, man. Like if he's down to that 31-32% range, like you're just talking a different caliber of player than if he's in that 36-37 range.
Yeah. I actually like the Morris pickup because you can play Morris and Kuzma at the three and the four. Right. In the same way you can with LeBron and Kuzma, right? Because you got LeBron, who's the more physical presence, and then Kuzma's the more, you know, like the knock on Kuzma, even when he was at his best, was, man, it would be nice if he could get to the free throw line more. The reason he doesn't get to the free throw line more is because he doesn't like that contact. And if he doesn't like that contact on the offensive end, he's not going to like it on the defensive end either.
Right.
So I think, you know, that kind of explains itself in its own way there. And the other thing, too, with like the small forward thing, the Lakers kind of have this identity as a throwback team anyway, and Kuzma is a throwback small forward, right? Like that's he's before shooting became this the priority that it is. He would have been fine on like a 90s, you know, maybe like a late 90s, early 2000s as a small forward, and I think that's kind of where the Lakers might be best using him here. I also think, like you said, if he's playing on those AD lineups, I think also in the Dwight lineup. So if you have a front court of Kuzma, Morris, and Dwight, and you get out and run, I think that's where you're going to get the best version of a bench lineup Kuz type experience. I think that's the best way to use him there. And I think, you know, with Morris showing up, they'll be able to go to that more. Now, where do those minutes come from? Like, who's going to – if Morris is getting more minutes, like, where are you finding those minutes from? But just in general, I think he's just better suited for small forward, not just physically but mostly mentally.
I think there's also – an either or component to this too, where like if Kuz doesn't have it going that day, you got maybe lean on Morris a little more, but vice versa too, right? Kuz, like when Kuz is hot, Kuz can do things that nobody but LeBron or AD can do on the roster, right? Like occasionally Danny Green like will get hot,
but quarters
Right. Like, but Danny Green's is a different type of hot. It's from distance. Kuz can really mix it up as a scorer. So it's nice to have that insurance in case he doesn't, so that you can really that it's, you know, it's a luxury that you have that. I think that kind of in even Waiters plays into this, having more just guys who can play in playoff games. If we're not going to solidify a closing five, which I'm very curious to see if we do that, then having if they're going to go the who's hot route, having more guys who can actually get to that point, I think is a lot. There's a lot of value in that.
We're a couple games into the Markieff Morris experience. How are you liking it?
I like it, man. I love how he doesn't hesitate on his threes. I've been impressed with his passing. Watch when we are shooting free throws. Watch how he blows up the defensive big. Like he just puts his shoulder.
Oh my God. Like, I noticed the same thing.
Blows these dudes up. Yeah. Watch out for that. Like he just rocks dudes. It's great. And we need more of that on this roster. That's another argument for Waiters too, by the way, is just that kind of nasty dude mentality. But yeah, off ball movement, not hesitating on his
Waiters
threes.
Is definitely big enough to be physical.
Yes, he is. and part of his mentality too.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I've enjoyed, you know, this is a weird kind of preseason-esque type game against the Warriors, and he didn't get a ton of run against the Pelicans, but he was fine. He didn't shoot well, but I thought he played well. But I've enjoyed him so far. Sorry, he's a professional stretch four, and I really enjoy that. What have you seen?
I've liked a lot of it. The mentality thing is the biggest addition to me. Those guys, like you said, I pointed it out to Jen. I was like, all right, watch this free throw. Morris is going to wind up on the ground, but I guarantee you the guy next to him is going to be down there with him. And lo and behold, that's how it happened. And, you know, that it's just that stuff you can't teach. Like we just talked about Kuzma and why he's more effective at small forward than power forward. And this is a big reason why Morris just has that dog in him. Have you ever heard? He and his brother were on Highly Questionable with Levitard, and they were talking about how while they were at Kansas, they went to this party, and there was this track girl who one of the twins were interested in, and it just so happened that there were football players there too, and I think one of the football players was also interested in this track girl, and the football players vastly outnumber the Morris brothers, but he said, you know what? If it was Marcus talking, I think it was Keith. He was like, you know, Mook and I, we got back to back and we just took him on. And it's like, that's the mentality that the Lakers need. Those guys who just like, if it is that kind of situation, it's like, all right, we're going back to back and we're going to swing our way out of this. I like that. I like that a lot.
The Clippers think they can punk us.
Yeah.
They've very much come to that conclusion, and we need some guys that prove that they can. And he's along those lines.
Yep. All right, this one's not really a question, but it is a comment that I think you would like. This is from Smoking Aces 562. Says, the negativity is real. The Lakers are this is in quotations. The Lakers are the 2020 world champions of basketball. Anthony, so my one gripe about this. So I think you'd enjoy that.
Indeed. I love he didn't even ask a question. He just that scenario.
Yeah, I think my response to that was that like if the Lakers win a championship and then they have a parade but it doesn't feature them like stopping. Remember that one year when they beat the Celtics? They just had the parade and then never stopped so that nobody could really give questions. Like, yeah, I complained about that. I thought that was a bummer. Jesus. the next question here. So it was from the other day. It was the pineapple, the upside down pineapple cake. But part two of that question was what was your lowest point? You know that the Lakers are. It's kind of fun where they are right now to be able to look back and kind of laugh. What was your lowest point during these last like five or six, 7 years or so when things were real, real bad?
So it's funny because this ended up working out just fine, although I think this guy's good at his job. The Ty Lue thing sent me over the edge because it was like, you guys fucked that up. You fucked up hiring a coach. Like, you had a fucking gig for the guy. Like, how do you, it's not a free agent where somebody swooped in last moment. Like, no, right. Ty Lue's our coach. Like, how'd you fuck that up? He'd already agreed to terms. So, and it was just like this long string of fuck ups that got to that, like, and they got to that, like, simplest thing, and they still did it. And so that for me was the straw that broke the camel's back. It just, like, made me a little bit crazy. What was your low point over this time?
Well, like, Byron Scott, just in general.
Sure. So, yeah, that was the worst thing for sure.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it was like a cumulative thing because it was that. It was Byron. Then, like, oh, yeah, Luke's coming from Golden State. That's going to, oh, no, this is not what I was hoping for.
Really didn't work out. Yeah.
And just like, you know, letting guys walk or trading freaking Zoo for Mike Muscala, stuff like that. It accumulated and then they fuck up a coaching hire. And that was, but yes, Byron was definitely worse.
It's funny. You hear the stuff that's coming out of Chicago with Jim Boylan. Like, he's Jim Byron. Like, that's who he is. Like, it's just. Like, I can't, it's so bad. Like, I listened to, there was in that one moment where Zach LaVine had to clarify that he was talking trash to, who was it, Schroeder or something like that, that he had 40. People thought he was telling his coach, I got 40, man. You know, like, right. The fact that it got to that point, like, it's not who you were talking to. It's that people thought you might have been talking to your coach. That's the important part there. To me, the Byron experience was just so... It was such a gut punch because he was the first of like the former Lakers to really let us down, right? Like that.
That's a good way of looking.
Because it kind of started the trend. Because first it was Byron, and then it was Luke, and then it was Magic, right? And you thought, all right, maybe they learned their lesson. They stuck with Pelinka. Unfortunately, to this point, it's worked out with Pelinka. But Byron being the first, because you couldn't even criticize him. If I criticized Byron in any way, shape, or form, it was, well, D'Angelo Russell is soft. Ronnie White is better than Jordan Clarkson. Or Ronnie Price.
White.
The Southern comedian was better than Jordan Clarkson. Yes. So yeah, that was pretty tough to swallow, that entire experience. But you mentioned Luke Walton, and that's a really good one because we thought he was going to be so good. We thought he was going to be like, it was the perfect hire. He was going to be this modern guy who came from a modern organization. He was going to help modernize the Lakers. And like the way that he was a disappointment, that's an underrated low point of this entire stretch.
For sure, man. For sure. It's been a rough go of it, man. I don't want to go back there anytime soon.
It's made this season all the more enjoyable.
Hell yes.
You know,
this has been one of my favorite all-time. Who knows how this season ends, you know, ultimately, but one of my favorite all-time regular seasons for sure.
Absolutely. They're probably going to win like 60, 65 games. That's insane.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. If you guys have any topics that you want to get in, make sure you get them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes. Or you know what? You can start emailing them to me as well at LakersLockedOn@gmail.com. Or, you know, if you're a Patreon subscriber, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.